Jerry Saul Show in 5, roll tape, 4, cue Jerry, 3, bring audio up, 2, stand by, 1, play intro.
Stay tuned for the Terry Saul Show, Saltissimo, on Salem's original radio station, 104.3 and 1220 AM, KSLM.
We will never forget the sacred tears that are shed when our loved ones return home. There's a hero, there's a soldier, a man or woman that's given their life for our country, for our freedom. God bring them home safe this time. Above and beyond the call of duty, our fallen heroes, our paramedics, our firefighters, and our law enforcement.
There's a hero, there's a soldier, a man, a woman that's given their life.
We will never forget our veterans of foreign war. There's a man with a gold star, a silver star, Medal of Honor, a man with a Purple Heart, a Pearl Harbor survivor, and the Korean War. And there's a man from Vietnam. My father fought in World War II, and when he passed away, they gave him a 21-gun salute. Let's all stand and honor our heroes. The Coast Guard, the National Guard, the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, and the United States Marines.
There's a hero, there's a soldier, a man given their life for our country, for our freedom. God bring them home safe, God bring them home safe, God bring them home safe, one hero at a time. Boy,
that music just never gets old. Good morning. Welcome to the Terry Saul Saturday Morning Show on Salem's original radio station. We are KSLM. I am your host, and I'm so glad that you join us. Joining us today in studio is a good friend of mine, Captain Richard Chesborough. He has traveled the world more than once, hasn't it? It's
been more than a couple of times. A couple times, yep.
He doesn't travel by airplane. He travels in a big old honking ship or boat, or what do they call these things that you went in?
Sailboats.
Okay. Sailboat.
Sailboats, but they do have a motor also.
Do they really?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. We're going to talk about, and you've been on our show before, we're going to talk about the lady, is it called the Lady Free?
The Lady Free.
The Lady Free. Now, that was the first time that you decided to get crazy and go around the world and play around, isn't it?
No, not the first time. The second time.
Okay, the second time.
Absolutely.
All right, let's go back.
By the way, free is spelled F-R-E-I. It's the Danish spelling of free.
Really?
Free.
We're going to go back to the 1970s. Is that when you started with the Lady Free, F-R-E-I?
1976 was the date that
Well, then
we
I was correct, the 1970s.
You were absolutely right.
Okay. First of all, you were a young, 36, 37-year-old?
That's about right.
Got married, had a couple of children.
Had three.
Three children. Okay, three kids. And you come home one day and you say to your lovely wife, we're going to buy a boat and sail the world, right?
That was earlier. That was when we took off on a different boat on the Moon Mist.
Okay.
And we did. We spent 2.5 years cruising the South Pacific primarily and with the family. And that was just an absolute incredible experience. So when we finally made it back to the United States, we had already sold our boat overseas. And when we got back, that was because of an illness that my wife had picked up down in the islands.
Okay.
And it prevented her from being able to sail anymore because it affected her nervous system, and it was just a terrible disease. At any rate, we came back to California, settled in the Bay Area, actually in Sausalito, and decided, you know, we so thoroughly enjoyed that cruising with the smaller boat. Why don't we buy a liveaboard type of a boat? Again, as a family, we made that decision, started looking for boats, and one of them caught my eye that was for sale down in San Pedro, California. And that's the one that turned out to be the Lady Free. It was a 102-foot brigantine schooner, and that's what really attracted me, because this is a 17th century design of a boat.
So
you just don't see
boat?
Very many brigantine schooners around.
Okay, how old of a boat was this?
It was built in 1912,
okay,
originally, and it was sunk during the Second World War.
Wait. The boat you bought was sunk?
It was. It was underwater, not for very long.
I got a bridge for sale, Richard. You interested?
Well, needless to say, I didn't buy it when it was on the bottom. You know, they brought it back up.
Okay.
There was lots of stories and rumors about why it sank. The most interesting story I heard from one of the people that we bought it from was that it was sunk by the Germans during the Second World War.
Really?
Because she was all emptied out inside, and she was being used as a Baltic trader, or like a small freighter.
Okay.
And going back and forth across the Baltic, and they thought she was smuggling weapons or ammunition or whatever.
Really? So they sunk it.
But that was not the case at all. The people that owned it got it resurfaced. So it wasn't in very deep water, obviously. Now, when we bought it, it was still all gutted out. It had just come across the Atlantic Ocean to the United States through the Panama Canal and up to Southern California, carrying teak wood, had an entire load of teak on board. And when we bought it, they said, well, we're going to leave you enough teak so that you can finish off the inside of the boat, because we were looking at it as a liveaboard. And being a 102-footer, it had a lot of room on board. For a family of five, we needed the room.
All right, so buy the boat.
Yep.
And do you remember where your very first, what's the word I'm looking for, adventure, voyage? What's the word I'm looking for?
Yeah, probably a voyage.
What was your first
voyage? Day was an adventure with that boat, I'll tell you. We lived on it for 2 years before we took off on our first big adventure, and that was the tall ships race.
Now, does it have a shower and stuff on board?
Oh, yeah, we had a shower. We had two bathrooms. We had 16 bunks on board. A bunk is, of course, a
I know
nautical
what a bunk
term.
Is.
Okay. Sleeping quarters.
Right.
You know, and a couple of private cabins on it. A huge living room with a fireplace. I had a
wait. You had a fireplace
one of those metal freestanding fireplaces.
Okay, not one that actually burns wood, right?
Actually burns wood.
It did burn wood?
It did burn wood. And,
well, I'm not sure I'd like that idea.
It was very nicely installed, so
yeah,
there was
sure
no real
it was.
Danger.
That's why it sunk the first time.
No, we had some great adventures. We did a couple of commercials on board the boat while we were docked in Sausalito. And by the way, the harbor that we were docked in still exists to this day. It was called Pelican Harbor. Pelican Harbor is unique in that no boat is allowed in the harbor to dock unless it's made out of wood.
Really?
No fiberglass, no steel, none of that modern stuff. Mm-hmm. They like wood boats.
There you go.
And so I was right in my element there.
All right. So then all of a sudden you get this thing called the tall ship race.
Well, now, before that came up, I got to tell you a quick little side story.
Okay.
And this was interesting. It made the papers in San Francisco, but we had an actual ghost on board the
Get out
the Lady
of here.
Free.
Really?
A real honest-to-God ghost. My wife came face-to-face with it two or three times. I say it. It was a guy. And all my kids experienced the ghost, but not me. So I was the big doubting Thomas. Until one night, we had a fire on board.
From the fireplace, probably.
Not from the fireplace. No, it was actually from my wife's hairdryer. It somehow shorted out. She had forgot to unplug it, and it shorted out at the plug, and it caused a fire and in that little compartment.
Okay.
And because the bonnet, you know, it's one of those old-fashioned hair things that goes over your whole head, the smoke from it was very toxic because there was a lot of plastic that was smoldering. We were all sound asleep. This was like 3 o'clock in the morning, some ridiculous hour in the middle of the night. And all of a sudden, I felt somebody shaking me awake, you know, and just you know, no words were spoken, just shake. And I woke up startled and didn't see anybody, but I immediately realized the boat was full of smoke. So I dropped down to my hands and knees, and I'm crawling out through the main cabin looking for the doorway. Couldn't see a darn thing. Got the hatch opened up so I could start letting the smoke out. Didn't see any fire at all, just a lot of smoke. I get up on deck and realize, since I'm coughing like crazy, boy, this is really toxic smoke. And I realized I'm also the only one up on deck. And all of a sudden, here comes my youngest son, Mark.
How old was Mark?
Mark was about 10 at that time. He said, boy, he says, thanks for waking me up, Dad. He says, wow, the boat's on fire, you know. And so I sent him to go get the fire trucks, because downtown Sausalito, the fire department was only two blocks away. So while he was running up the street to go do that, you know, this was before cell phones, obviously.
Right.
I decided to dive back down below and start bringing the rest of my family up. And so I got down there and I got my oldest son, got my daughter, all of which were out of it. I mean, they were just, the fire chief told us afterwards, another 20 minutes and we'd have all been dead, just from
really?
The smoke, the toxicity of the smoke.
Sure.
So the last one I got up on board was my wife, and we literally had to carry her up. She was totally out of it. We got up on deck, and then the fire department shows up, and after they finally put the fire out, after almost sinking my boat with the amount of water they poured into it, it was a double hull construction, and they wanted to make sure they got all the water between the two hulls. So they were just flooding everything. What a mess. But at any rate, we were all safe. You know, that was the important thing. They were filling out their report. My son and I were both sitting there, and he says, okay, who first realized the boat was on fire? And I said, I did. At the same time, my son said, I did. And I'm looking at him like, wait a minute, Mark, I didn't even see you. I crawled up on deck, and, oh, he says, that's right. He says, you did beat me up to the deck. But he said, I remember you waking me up, Dad, and so I, you know, came up. Here we are having this little argument about who woke up who, and that's when we realized it must have been our friendly ghost that lived on the boat, because we both had the same exact experience of being, you know, really aggressively shaken to get up on deck. The fire chief or whoever it was that was taking the report was just shaking his head in disbelief.
Really? Was that the only experience that you had with the ghost?
Later on, we had another experience in South America with the ghost waking me up when the boat had broken anchor and it was drifting towards a whole bunch of rocks. Same experience, got shaken up in the middle of the night and went up on deck to see what was going on and realized that the boat had drifted all the way across this bay and was just imminently ready to crash into the rocks. And so I was able to roust a couple of deckhands to help me, and we got the engine started just in the nick of time, got the boat into safe,
really?
Deep waters. Yeah.
So
he was a good guy.
Who do you think the ghost was? Could it have been somebody on that on the ship when the Germans sunk the ship?
That would be my best guess.
Could have been the captain.
No way
of proving
it.
He
didn't, you know, I mean, I didn't realize, I didn't see what he looked like. Of course, back in those days, they didn't wear captain's uniforms or anything,
right?
Like nowadays. So it could have been a captain, could have been a crew member, could have been anybody. He was very definitely looking after that boat and took good care of us to make sure.
Was he looking after you or the boat, do you think? You as in your family?
I would like to think both, because he was just as concerned about the family as he was. That's the reason why he woke up Mark. Now, Mark's the youngest. I don't know why he didn't wake up my oldest son. He just went with the younger son.
Maybe Mark was the one that was the easiest to get up.
Could very well have been.
Yeah. I mean, that could very well be.
But that was a very unique experience. I hope I never have to go through that again.
Well, I bet.
But
we're gonna take a break here. We're broadcasting from the Denny's in South Salem. We just sat through a Kiwanis meeting, and you're a big member of the Kiwanis. And they meet here every Tuesday at noontime?
Every Tuesday at noontime.
All right.
Absolutely.
So we're going to take a short break. When we come back, more with today's special guest, Captain Richard Chesborough, as we continue broadcasting from Denny's in South Salem. You're listening to The Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Terry Saul Show, Saltissimo, on Salem's original radio station, 104.3 and 1220 AM KSLM.
Hey, this is Terry Saul, inviting you to join me each and every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for The Terry Saul Show. In the weeks coming up, we'll be joined by Kent McCord, who played Officer Jim Reed in the Adam 12 television show. We'll be talking with comedian Louis Anderson, as well as recording artist Patrick Lamb and local recording artist Brady Goss. We'll also be joined by Dr. Melinda Massart, who is an assistant professor of family medicine at the University of Pittsburgh. We'll be talking about precision medicine, all of them and more. So join us on the Terry Saul Show, Saturdays at 10 a.m. on Salem's original radio station, 104.3 FM at 1220 a.m. KSLM.
Wolfman here, and you're listening to Terry Saul. Give it to him, Terry.
Welcome back to the Terry Saul Show. Today's special guest is Captain Richard Chesborough, and we are broadcasting from Denny's in South Salem, where they just had the Kiwanis meeting that you are a member of. We're talking about the fact that you get on these little boats here, and you decide to go around the world here, but this one wasn't a little one. This is a 102-foot lady-free boat. You did something out of the Bay Area here. It's called the Tall Ship Race. What is that?
Tall ships have been around, you know, since the 17th century. Every year, there's a tall ships race somewhere in the world. And, I think it's every 2 years.
How do they determine if your ship's tall enough to be a tall ship?
Well, tall ships are square riggers. In other words, instead of the modern style, what they call the Marconi rig, which is vertical with kind of triangular-shaped sails. Okay. A tall ship uses a gaff rig. The sails are square. They're already in the air attached to the mast, and they're all furled up against the spars. So you have to climb up in the rigging, unlash them, and then they come down.
Who has to climb
so
up the rigging?
If you've ever seen any of the old Pirates of the Caribbean movies or Captain and Commander, whoever that actor was, I forget his name now. Those are square riggers. Those are tall ships.
Okay, but who has to climb up there? You don't climb up there, do you?
Oh, absolutely. I've climbed up many, many times.
Do you send the kid up there, one of the children up there?
If they'll go, I'll send them up first. Absolutely.
So do you like find out which one you don't like the most and send you go on up there?
Well, you know, it's funny. They're having to climb the ratlins 85 feet above the deck, which is not that bad if you're sitting at the dock.
Right.
When you're out in the ocean and the boat is rocking back and forth, it's a pendulum effect where, you know, it's not moving too bad down the deck, but the higher you go, the more the boat is swinging from side to side. And that's when it really gets exciting. And when you have to climb out on the spar, you're actually standing on a rope. You know, it's a fairly decent-sized rope, but you climb out on that spar and you have to untie the sails.
Okay.
Or if you're bringing the sails in, you have to furl them. And get them tied up around that spot.
Now, how long does that take to do that, to get up there and...
I don't know. I guess it depends on the weather conditions.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell we're in a restaurant, can't you?
You certainly can. It's pretty good. Thank you. Yes, we are in a restaurant.
We're in a restaurant.
Denny's
absolutely.
In South Salem here, and they're kind of cleaning up after the mess that we all made in here. Okay, so in the final 5 minutes there, now, you did something that I've done before, and believe me, I don't sail on boats there, but I actually went underneath... the Golden Gate Bridge. Mine was to go dump my mother-in-law's ashes, but it was still an exciting trip underneath the Golden Gate Bridge. How often do people get to do that? I mean, that's...
I did it once.
Yeah?
You know who I did it for?
Who?
Harvey Milk.
Why does that name sound familiar?
He was the city councilor that was shot and killed in office back in the early 1980s, along with Mayor Moscone. And it was another city councilor that killed the two of them.
Right.
Dan White.
Right.
And he was an ex-police officer, and he was mad because they wouldn't let him back on city council after he walked off the job. And he walked into Mayor Moscone's office and Harvey Milk and shot both of them. But the interesting thing is the mayor that took Moscone's place was Dianne Feinstein, who's now a senator, of course. You know Dianne. And so she called
like me
up, and she doesn't like you?
No, she doesn't like me.
I made fun
of her hair one time. She doesn't like me.
Okay.
All right, in the final 3 minutes and 45 seconds, can you tell that story about what you had to do?
Oh, it's a lot longer than that, but I can start it at least.
All right.
Anyways, she asked us if we would be willing to do the burial at sea off the Golden Gate Bridge.
Right.
Of Harvey Milk's ashes, which was one of his wishes.
And you have to go out like a mile past the bridge or something, don't you?
3 miles.
Three miles. Okay.
Three miles, yep. So we did the whole thing. When we were loading up the passengers, all of which were members of the gay community in San Francisco,
okay,
they ordered all the cameras, all the reporters, anybody from the press and media, all off the boat. And then they made me sign a disclosure statement that I would not disclose anything that happened while on board. And of course, the statute of limitations long since passed,
right,
so I don't
right.
mind talking about it. It's a great story. We took off. Well, first of all, when they were coming down the ramp, they had this long red carpet laid out. All of these supporters of Harvey were on the side,
okay,
throwing roses out in front. And the guy that's carrying the ashes had it in a like a cigar box, and
okay,
it was all covered with the Doonesbury cartoon strip, which was his favorite cartoon strip. Harvey Milk evidently had a great sense of humor.
Yeah.
And so they get on board. Oh, and the other thing they carried on board, which kind of unnerved me a little bit, was a great big punch bowl. And inside of it were boxes of grape juice. And this is right after Jonestown happened, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm kind of scratching my head wondering what the heck is going on here. But again, I had signed this non-disclosure agreement, so I just kind of went with the flow. So as we're motoring out towards the Golden Gate Bridge, I wasn't going to put the sails up because I wasn't allowed to have any crew on board, just my immediate family. And that's not enough people to raise all those sails.
Really?
Yeah. So we're going out through the Golden Gate Bridge, and they bring up that box of that I thought Harvey's ashes were in. Wasn't Harvey's ashes. It was full of great big marijuana sticks, you know, the like the size of cigars, except it was all marijuana.
Okay.
And everybody proceeded to get slammed.
Now, this was before the...
Before the ceremony.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyways, they're all over the boat having a great time. Up comes the bowl of punch, and they're all standing around with cups. And I finally called the guy over that's in charge, and I said, now, I know all about Jonestown, and I know everybody was drinking laced, you know, grape juice. Tell me this is just regular grape juice. He said, of course it's regular grape juice. We're just doing this out of symbolism because Harvey would have loved it.
Yeah.
Weird. So anyways, we're heading out, and just on the other side of the Golden Gate Bridge is what they call the Potato Patch, which is a very rough chunk of water.
Okay.
You know, the waves kind of come from different directions.
Right.
And everybody started getting seasick. And I mean everybody. People are hanging over the side. So the guy in charge comes running back to me, and he says, Captain, he says, there's no way we can make it 3 miles offshore. He says, everybody's getting sick already. How quick can we get this over with?
All right, I'm gonna stop you right there, because
okay,
we got to take a hard break here in about 20 seconds here. So hold that thought.
Okay.
When we come back, we're going to finish the story because it sounds like it's going to have a wild finish here.
It's got to have a wild finish.
So we need to take a short break. When we come back, more with our guest, Captain Richard Chesbrough. We're broadcasting from Denny's in South Salem, and we're broadcasting on the original radio station, KSLM, AM and FM. Back in a moment.
You're listening to The Terry Soul Show, Saltissimo, on Salem's original radio station, 104.3 and 1220 AM, KSLM.
We are back. This is Terry Saul's Saturday morning radio show on Salem's original radio station, KSLM AM and FM. I am your host. And this morning, Captain Richard Chesbrough is joining us today. And we're talking a little bit about a wild time underneath the Golden Gate Bridge.
Yes, a burial at sea.
Yes. And who was it that was buried?
City Councilor Harvey Milk.
Okay, in San Francisco.
He was a gay city councilor, okay, representing the whole gay community of San Francisco in the early 80s.
All right, so let's pick up where you left off. You're on board there,
yep,
and they break out the marijuana, and they're all getting snockered.
That's right.
Okay, except you and your crew.
Drinking grape juice.
Yeah. All right, so what happened?
So anyways, we get into the Potato Patch, and now...
Now, the Potato Patch is real rough seas.
Real rough water.
Just off the Golden Gate Bridge.
Just off the Golden Gate Bridge.
Okay.
And it's been there for centuries, and everybody knows about it, except these people on board do not know about it. The interesting thing is we have a real long bowsprit, which is that pole that sticks out the front of a boat.
Okay.
And we have actually four sails attached to it that are called jibs, but there's a big webbing underneath it. So there was probably six or seven of the guests that were out there on that. And when we were going up and down those swells, I mean, we were literally crashing into the next wave, and these guys are getting soaked. So they were scrambling to get back on board. But fortunately, they all made it on board. So the guy in charge comes back to me, and he says, we've got to turn the boat around and go back. He says, this is no fun anymore. We don't want everybody to get seasick, you know. I said, okay, if you don't tell anybody, I won't tell anybody, and we'll go ahead and slowly, you know, slide his ashes over the side. We're all, you know, going to be silent about this, so nobody's going to get in trouble. So they said, okay, fine. So I said, now the important thing is to remember is that wait until I turn the boat so that the wind is coming over the starboard side, and then you'll just throw his ashes over the port side.
Now the port is the left side, the starboard right. is the right side.
I don't think this guy understood Oops. Starboard from port, because what indeed happened is they were up on the bow of the boat. Keep in mind, 102 feet, so it's a long ways, and I'm at the very back end of the boat. They have their little ceremony. They say their prayers, you know, over another box, which is the one that really had his ashes in. And there's probably, I don't know, 25 or 30 of them standing all around in this group. And the next thing I see is I see all the ashes going up in the air. And I haven't even, I mean, I was just barely starting my turn.
Uh-oh.
And they're on the wrong side of the boat.
Uh-oh.
So guess what happens to the ashes?
The wind in the bay
the wind,
there.
And it flies, the ashes
oh, no.
fly all back
oh,
onto
no.
the boat.
Oh, no.
And so they're all jumping up and down. They're brushing themselves off. Ashes are getting all over them. And they're just screaming, you know, oh, my God. So again, the guy comes back to me and he says, Harvey didn't quite make it into the ocean. He's all over your boat. What are we going to do? And I said, well, whenever we have a mess on the boat, we hose the boat down. So he says, well, do it. And, you know, we're going to get ourselves all cleaned off and hose him off because we have scuppers along the side, so all the ashes will flow over. So I send my youngest son, Mark, the 10-year-old, and we have a deck hose that's connected to a motor. And it pumps seawater, you know, and that's what we use to hose down the boat. So he gets up there on the bow of the boat, and they're all standing back out of the way, and he starts hosing the boat down, you know, back and forth from the bow, you know, backwards. And the funniest part was, all of a sudden, he starts going into this, I forget where the song is from, but it's, I'm gonna wash that man right out of my
oh,
hair. I
mean,
you know,
oh,
one of the musicals, yeah. you know, which is exactly what he was doing. He was washing that man out of everybody's hair, you know. And they started laughing, and they got over their seasickness, and we just had a grand time all the way back to the San Francisco Yacht Club, which is the most exclusive yacht club in
and
San Francisco.
And nobody said a word about the...
Nobody said boo about it.
Until now.
And I went to see the movie when it came out. The movie was called Milk.
Yeah.
And I forget what year it came out, but quite a while back. And I thought they might have had something about that, but obviously there were no videos taking, no film, no reporters on board. That part was just left out of the film.
Wow. Now hilarious. We get the boat back finally to dock there. I imagine you and your crew had a pretty good little laugh after that happened. Well, you
oh,
said
that,
none of the
sure
crew
did.
Was on there, so it was just the family.
Just the family, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And, of course, the kids can't keep their mouth shut.
Of course
know,
not.
Nor
right.
me.
So you get back there, and is that pretty much the end of that marriage?
No, no. We at that point, we decided we were going to do the 1980 Tall Ships race.
Okay.
And that was a race from California to Hawaii to Canada and all the way back to San Diego. About a 6,000-mile race.
How long would that take?
Almost three months.
Really?
It took from beginning
and
to end.
And it was just you and your family, or did you have
right.
crew?
No. The interesting thing is we found out, I did an inquiry about it because it was a tall ship, and they said, well, nobody that has a privately owned tall ship has ever entered in a tall ships race before. And I says, well, okay, I guess I'm first then. And so they couldn't find anything in the rules to say, no, you can't, so I got approved. One of the requirements is that you have to train inexperienced kids on how to run a tall ship. And I said, oh, great, so I can't have any experienced crew. Well, you have your family. I said, well, yeah, but, you know, it's a big boat. And they said, well, okay, you can have a couple of other guys, you know, that are adults. But you have to have at least 16 kids on board.
Wow.
Half boys, half girls, that have had no experience. So we put an ad in the paper. In fact, you're looking at it right there, and it talks about interviewing the kids for the positions.
Okay.
We had a what they call the Bay Area Marine Institute that sponsored it, and we interviewed over 300 kids for 16 openings, and we ended up with half boys and half girls, you know, eight and eight. So I immediately started teaching them because there's a lot they had to learn about the boat, and I showed you a picture in here of all the rigging. For example, we have running rigging and what they call standing rigging, which is what holds the mast up. But the running rigging is the most important because that's what controls the sails. And when you've got people up in the rigging, you don't want to pull the wrong line. And keep in mind, you have to do this 24 hours a day. So it could be in the middle of the night with zero light. So it was very important that these kids memorize all of those lines.
And it's like 66 lines or something?
66 different ones.
Okay.
But anyways, they were great learners. They were sharp kids, highly motivated. And everything was great until we got about halfway to Hawaii and we ran into some bad weather. And I mean 40-mile-an-hour winds and 40-foot seas for four solid days. And that's when the biggest learning experience that I've ever had in sailing occurred. I found out the girls and the women are the best crew members you can have.
Really?
Much better than the guys. They may not be as strong, but by God, even though everybody was sick on board, they stood all their watches, they did their jobs. You know, they might be throwing up every few minutes, but they stuck it out. All the guys fell apart on us. I mean, they just climbed into their sleeping bags and said, no, throw us overboard. You know, we don't want to do this anymore. We're sick.
So how long did it take you to go from the Bay Area to Hawaii?
That was about, I want to say 16 days. I think it was 16 days.
And you're racing other ships?
Yes. Yep. There was, I think, 13 all told that were in that race.
Do you see each other in the race as you're going?
Sure.
I mean, you see the other ships?
And we were always behind everybody, you know, because...
That's because half your crew was throwing up.
Well, most of the other boats were a heck of a lot bigger than us. I mean, they were 300-400 feet in length.
Really?
And they had huge crews. You know, the Japanese tall ship was incredible to watch those guys. So anyways, we went to Hawaii. We put off one of our male crew members. He was from a very wealthy family in California, and they thought it would make a man out of him. It didn't. I mean, he couldn't get along with anybody on board. He just wanted to go home. He was crying to his mama and made phone calls, through our single sideband system, trying to get his mother to fly a helicopter to come and get him off. Anyways, he was the only one we put off. And then from there, we went to Victoria, Canada. And when you're doing a tall ships race, every port you go into is a big celebration. I mean, you know, the tall ships are coming, and it's quite a spectacle to see all these beautiful big ships, you know, sailing into harbors.
How long would you stay in port?
Usually 4 or 5 days. That was about it. And then we'd head off on the next leg.
So all the ships would leave at the same time then? Or?
Yep.
Okay.
I'll never forget sailing through the San Juan Islands. We had a whole school of orcas swimming around the boat. Beautiful, you know what an orca is.
Right.
And it was in a heavy fog. We came out of the fog bank with the orcas, and I turned around and looked behind us, and here come about three other tall ships out of the fog. They look like ghost ships, you know, that you'd see. I mean, I wish I'd had a movie camera. I'd have taken some great footage.
If you're out there with four or five other ships, are you guys talking to each other, the ships?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We radio contact with everybody. Now, the general rule is you could not start your motor. Once you're out of the bay and you're in the ocean, you shut your engines off and you sail. That's why it's a tall ship's race.
Yeah.
And some of the big boats didn't like that idea, so they would cheat and start their motors. As it turned out of 13 tall ships, we came in fourth because we were the only ones that didn't cheat.
Really? Now, what was the grand prize?
Oh, it was just, I don't know.
Bragging rights?
Trophy, bragging rights. We got a nice certificate. Here's one that we got right here. I know this is radio, but at least you can see it. That was one of the certificates we received on that. Yeah, that was a great experience. I'm glad I did it. And whenever the kids and I always get together, my ex-wife, she's now an ex-wife, we love talking about some of our adventures.
We're going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We're coming right back in just a moment. You're listening to the Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM. Our guest is Captain Richard Chesbrough. When we come back, more of his around-the-world journey right here. Stick around.
You're listening to the Terry Saul Show, Saltissimo, on Salem's original radio station, 104.3 and 1220 AM, KSLM.
Now, here's what I want you to say this time. I want you to say, you're listening to Terry Saul, Saltissimo.
Terry, I'm not going to say that.
Say tall, Saltissimo.
You can't even say it. No, how was that again?
Saltissimo.
I'm not going to say it.
Come on.
No.
3 years, you think you can get it right. Say, you're listening to Terry Saul, Saltissimo.
I don't want to do this again.
Welcome back to our final few minutes this morning. Our guest has been Captain Richard Chesbrough. We are broadcasting from Denny's, South Salem, where earlier today they had the Kiwanis lunch. You've been a member of the Kiwanis for how many years?
Oh, my goodness. Probably well over 20 years. I don't know exactly, but over 20 years.
What do the Kiwanis do?
They primarily focused on kids. Young kids, high school kids, middle school kids. All of our energies, all of our fundraising, everything goes to kids. Like today, as a guest here, you witnessed us giving out scholarships from two different high schools mm-hmm. to seniors that are graduating. They apply and fill out applications that tell all the wonderful things they do in terms of community service and what their goals are and what they want to be when they graduate college. And so we pick out the most deserving and give them $500 scholarships and
nice.
Recognition.
So you had several kids today that you gave them the scholarship to.
We all did, right. Absolutely.
And Kiwanis is also big with Dornbeckers, and every year you give
one
away
a major project.
A car, and it's a brand new car.
We raffle off a brand new Mustang every year at the Oregon State Fair.
Now, a little bit later on today, you're picking up that Mustang, and it's going to be down here in the Willamette Valley for a while?
It's going to be down at Walmart on South Commercial. And we're going to be selling raffle tickets. So if there's anybody in that neighborhood, come on by, spend $5, and you might win a brand new Mustang. Mustang.
Mustangs are some high-value Mustangs. They're incredible cars,
this
aren't they?
This one's got custom wheels and custom paint job and pinstriping and all the goodies,
How many years you guys been doing that?
26 years.
And it's always a Mustang.
We've raised millions of dollars for Dornbecker Children's Cancer. Our goal is to one day not have to do the Mustang raffle because we've wiped out cancer for kids.
Sure. And
so that's what we work towards.
Good. Good job. And if people would like to purchase a ticket, if they can't get a hold of you down at the Walmart there, they can always contact you on the Willamette Queen boat.
They sure
can. And they can get one there.
Yep.
And then during the state fair, you have a booth there with the car. And
we'll be there for the whole...
It's usually the last day of the state fair is when you have the big raffle.
Right. One of the young kids that graduated from Dornbecker, cancer-free, lives in West Salem, and he's the one that's going to be pulling the winning ticket this year.
So, nice. Well, good. Congratulations. Cool. You guys do a good job with that. All right, let's talk about the end of your marriage.
Well, we were talking on the last session about the Lady Free.
And the Lady Free is your
102-foot
boat that you had for
the
a Brigantine few years.
Schooner, right.
Okay.
And so we came back to Sausalito, which is where we departed from. It was shortly thereafter that... my wife met a tugboat captain in the Bay Area who kind of swept her off her feet. Don't know why, but he did. And
they'll get so you every time, those tugboat captains.
Well, he was one of those rough, typical tugboat captain type of guy. Low, gravelly voice.
Yeah.
Total opposite of me. You know, I was the corporate IBMer type.
Did he have a beard?
Had a beard.
Yeah.
And
wore a beanie cap?
I don't know if he ever wore a beanie cap.
His name Guido?
No, his name was Tony, though, so
there you
it tells
go.
A little bit about his nationality.
Tony.
At any rate, next thing I know, I was being served divorce papers.
Whoops.
Out of the divorce, I ended up with the boat, and she got everything else, including the kids. That kind of hurt. Well, we had joint participation.
So there you are sitting in the bay with a boat, no wife. What do you do?
Well, at that time, I was working for Boeing.
I thought you were going to say you cracked open a bottle of champagne.
Well, that too.
Okay.
But after the champagne was gone, I got back to reality. So Boeing offered me a job, and they asked me if I would open up an office for them in Sacramento. And I said, well, as long as I can take my home with me. So they didn't understand what I meant by that. Then they realized I was talking about the boat.
Okay.
So that's when I discovered, yeah, I can take a big boat like that all the way to Sacramento. And
how
I did.
How do you get there? I was going to say, you don't put that thing on the freeway. How do you get there?
No, well, there's some Sacramento bridges, River. There's some bridges that have to open up okay. for you so that you can get through. But there was enough depth in the river to get us all the way up there. Keep in mind, they've got some big boats already up in the Delta area.
Right.
Like the Delta King and so forth, you know, right there in downtown Old Sac.
So you get to Sacramento with your big 102-foot boat. What do you do?
I went to work, obviously, getting that office opened up for Boeing. And we had a big state government contract with the state of California with Computer Times. So that was my main job. Then I got an offer from a fellow by the name of Terry Black, who owned a mansion on the Delta called the Club Lido.
Okay.
And so he says, well, look, rather than paying rent, you know, for a dock in downtown Sac, come on out to my place and it's all free. I'll pay for your electricity, your water, everything else. I just want the boat there because I like it. And so we went out there to the Club Lido, and oh my God, what an experience that was. This guy was, he was one of those guys that throws parties, maybe only 6 parties a year, but they are over-the-top, jet-setter-type parties. People come by helicopter. They come by Rolls-Royce, Ferraris. I mean, I met some of the wealthiest young jet-setters all up and down the West Coast. I met some interesting entertainment groups. One that stands out was Kiss. When Kiss was in their heyday, they performed at the mansion. Even Governor Jerry Brown came aboard with Linda Ronstadt at one point while we were there. He wanted the tour of the boat. I'm giving them a tour around. Of course, he's got his 2 security guys with him. All of a sudden, we realize Jerry's not with us anymore. So the security guys are really getting excited, you know. And
don't tell me Governor Overboard.
No, it wasn't Governor Overboard, but he did climb way up to the crow's nest in the rigging. So here he is, 80-some-odd feet in the air. Obviously, you know, was not quite in all of his senses, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all panicky. How do we get him down? How do we get him down? I said, well, you climb up there and you pull him down. That's how. And so these 2 security guys climbed up there. I went up with him as well. And we got him. He was just having a great time. He was up there.
What was he doing up there?
Oh, he was acting like a pirate, you know, just you know, a little transgression, you know. But anyways, we got him down. And on another occasion, they hired a trapeze artist. And we actually set up an entire trapeze setup with no safety net under it between the 2 masts on the boat. And we had this female trapeze artist doing flips and spins and catching each other just like in the circus. Just some great experiences.
But, unbelievable.
Yeah, that's... and then, unfortunately, everything has to come to a halt. I made a decision that I was going to do something with the boat rather than just while away my time up in the Sacramento area. So we decided to take the boat to the St. Thomas and St. John's in the Virgin Islands, and I was going to open it up for a charter business.
From Sacramento, yeah.
From Sacramento.
Okay.
So I put a crew together, and most of these were all single people. My son came with us, and my daughter, and we went down all the way down through the coast, through the Panama Canal. Boy, I know we're running short on time, but we had so many adventures. We were running out of food at the Panama Canal, and I saw a shrimp boat anchored next to us, so I rode over to it. Told him my plan. I said, I got all these kids on board and, you know, we're kind of getting hungry. Would you be willing to do a trade? And he said, what do you got? I said, how about some Jack Daniels? Boy, their eyes lit up. I said, okay, great. So I handed over the bottle of Jack Daniels and they said, well, what do you got to put shrimp in? I said, nothing. He says, well, what are you sitting on? I says, well, an ice chest. Pass that up here. And it was a big ice chest and they filled it to the top.
Captain, we are just about out of time, and we haven't even touched on half the stuff that I wanted to talk to you about. Would you do me a favor? Would you come back next week, and let's do this again, and we'll pick up from the Panama Canal?
Love to.
All right. Again, we'd like to thank our folks over here at Denny's South Salem for allowing us the back room here to broadcast from. We'll be back again next week with Captain Richard Chesbro, and we're going to talk about Hurricane David and how he decided to go right through it.
Decided to go through it. I turned around and was trying to get away from it, and it still got me though. That wouldn't happen nowadays, because nowadays the boats have wonderful early warning systems and all kinds of equipment that tells you exactly where the storms are and how that all works.
Didn't say the guy was real smart, but we're going to talk with him next week anyhow.
You're listening to The Terry Soul Show, Saltissimo, on Salem's original radio station, 104.3 and 1220 AM KSLM.
If you would like us to come to your business for a broadcast, drop us a line at terry@1220.am or catch me on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Terry Soul. A big thank you to our special guest, and we will be back next week and do this all over again at 10 a.m. on Salem's original radio station, KSLM AM and FM. Have a great and safe week. Today's show was produced by Leon J. Tacky, and it goes without saying this has been a Tacky production.
That's a wrap. Good job, folks. And we're off. Thanks, everybody.